Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
What I wanted to do was remind my niece of what God says and all these amazing things, like he holds the oceans in the palm of his hand, scripture says. So if he can hold the oceans, he can hold you. And just raising their eyes to the magnificence of who God is and what he says about them, then I think you've got a little child that goes in knowing that they're not alone and God is their father, and we don't have to be afraid because our father owns the place.
Boy, that is powerful insight and delivered so eloquently. Sally Lloyd-Jones is the author of numerous children's books. She has sold millions of copies of the works that she has written for children. And her latest book is a book called Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing. And as you heard her mention at the outset, she wrote this book out of a painful experience that her niece was going through at school, and she wanted to encourage her auntie to niece, and we're going to have a conversation in just a moment about that very topic. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, graduating difference maker since 1899, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. At this year's National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, I had the privilege of catching up with Sally Lloyd-Jones and having a conversation with her about 101 ways to encourage a hurting child. Today on the program, joined by Sally Lloyd-Jones, who's an author, she's a speaker, she's a wonderful woman, even though we're just getting to know each other. Welcome to the broadcast today.
Thank you so much, Roger.
You are the author of the new book, Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing.
Yeah.
And I love that. It has kind of an English lilt to it. Tell us a little bit about the background, about the title, anyway.
Well, it was inspired by my niece, who at the time was about 8, and she was a very vivacious, happy little girl, kind of singing all the time, like she was singing a soundtrack of the movie of her life.
Yeah, like you'd like to see 8-year-old girls just
and they can do everything.
Right.
She could choreograph, she could sing, she could dance, she could do everything. One time she said to me, I want to be an opera singer. And I said, oh, that's so nice. And then she went, what is an opera singer? But it was that kind of little girl.
I love that enthusiasm.
I do too. And then overnight, almost overnight, she changed and she became very quiet, very withdrawn, and I was so mystified. And then we found out she was being bullied at school.
Mm.
And it obviously that's heartbreaking for a parent and an aunt. I'm her aunt. Mm. And later she explained to me that the reason she'd stopped talking and everything, she thought, in her little girl logic, she thought if she stopped being herself, she wouldn't get bullied.
Mm.
And it was heartbreaking because not only was she losing her voice, she was losing herself.
Right.
And I thought, if adults had to deal with that kind of thing every day, how would they cope? And I thought, well, we usually want to read something before we go to work to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, what are we giving children to read before they go to school? Normally, they're being told things that they have to do right or mm-hmm. try harder and don't do this. And I just thought, I wish there was a book that she'd want to read that would be like a treasure. I imagined it by her bedside table that would be her book. And I thought, I want to have a book that she can read that would tell her what God says about her instead mm-hmm. of what the bully said.
Mm.
And so I realized I needed to write one because it needed to look beautiful and it needed to be short. And
And you have a background with writing for children.
Yes, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm very fortunate to do it.
Well, we're very fortunate that you do it because it is such a huge need. Kids are so influenced by media influences these days.
Yeah.
I never would have imagined 5 years ago. I came in contact with a friend of mine. I asked him what he was doing his graduate work in because he had a business background.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pursuing a doctorate in media psychology. And
oh,
I asked him, I said, David, that is interesting. He's now teaching it. I've met another guy who went to school with her studying the same thing because of the media influences and the images and how they're shaping and forming. And this 8-year-old girl is being influenced by other girls who are being influenced by the media, and this mean girl mentality is everywhere.
It's so terrible. And to see a child lose that wonder and joy and mm-hmm. because they can't really hide it, can they?
No.
And the other thing that really struck me was, you know, we have to guide children, we have to instruct them, they look to us mm-hmm. for that. But I think sometimes in all the things that they look to us for, we forget to give them hope.
Mm.
You
wow.
know, we adults, we need hope.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go to my devotional
right.
if it was full of, like, now today you must do this and stop doing that. And if it was all rules,
yeah,
that just, the moral code, we can't keep up with it. We would just be we don't need a moral code so much as we need a rescuer, and we need him. We need to be reminded of God's grace.
And that has to be the toughest challenge for parents who are trying to raise kids when you grew up in a home where perhaps your very well-meaning parents were using guilt and shame as their primary motivators.
I know.
Now, you want to be a good boy and do this, right?
And of course, rules are important for children especially, but I think we've gone a bit too much that way, and we need to remember that when they go into those really hard... I don't know that I could cope with going to school, and the playground. They need... What I wanted to do was remind my niece of what God says, and all these amazing things, like, you know, if he holds the oceans in the palm of his hand, scripture says. So if he can hold the oceans, he can hold you. And just raising their eyes to the magnificence of who God is and what he says about them, and that then I think you've got a little child that goes in knowing that they're not alone and God is their father. And as I heard Tim Keller say, we don't have to be afraid because our Father owns the place.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great?
Owns
the place.
It's a good reminder. I was having a conversation with a couple of young people in our church not too long ago, and their parents had gone through a divorce. And as they were kind of unpacking and sorting through, you know, what was real and what wasn't real, one of the girls in question said that it was interesting to her because she realized she had to unlearn a lot of things that she had been taught were true because her mom said so. And then as the divorce happened, she realized there were a lot of things that weren't true, but mom was telling her anyway. And she said, but you know, when you're a kid and your parents tell you something and you just believe it.
You do, because they're gods in a way to us when
exactly.
we're little.
Well, I love this resource because, and your heart for putting it together for just that reason, that you're giving, you're equipping parents. Because let's face it, I mean...
It's hard.
I mean, especially dads. You know, there's like three things we could say to our kids. Atta boy, atta girl.
It's
hard.
I mean?
Yeah. And yet you've given us, you know, 100, you know, to kind of deal with here. Well, good idea starters. Conversation
starters.
That's
what I wanted. I didn't want... And they're very short. And each one, which we can't show on the radio, but they're all so beautifully illustrated. And that was the other part that I really knew was important was... It has to look beautiful. And the whole, when you open the book, it invites you to stay on the page. And that's what I hoped. And I also hoped that the image, because they're all really cool, like they're not what you might expect. They're skyscrapers and knights charging, and as well as Bible scenes. And I wanted every page to be a surprise. But I also wanted that the picture, you know, like with a hymn, you might hear the tune and it will bring back the words. And I wanted for the child, the image to stay in their head in the day and then for it to bring back the words, the truth.
I'm glad you used the musical analogy. I was chatting with Keith Getty recently, and we were talking about the hymns that he and Kristen are writing and the tunes that go along with it. And he said one of the more frustrating aspects of music for him is when he hears someone who's so focused on the musical style that the words are kind of an afterthought. Pick a couple words in the Psalms, and that's fine, you know. And then the other gutter is we're so consumed with the lyric that the melody is just whatever, as long as it's singable. And the line he used was, he said, that's kind of like saying, I'm hungry, let's go to a restaurant. Is the food edible? Well, of course it's edible. You're going to pay for it, for crying out loud. You don't want it to be edible. You want it to be a masterpiece. It's totally delicious.
And it's the same with books. It's interesting because, you know, even like design, I think design is crucial, but it's if it's done well, you don't notice it. And so it's sort of devalued in some ways in publishing, I think. Some publishers don't always focus on that.
Do you find kids are getting more sophisticated in terms of what they expect? Because, I mean, the typical children's book used to have cute pictures and a few words, and it was just enough to keep someone's attention. It's tougher to keep their attention.
Yeah, it is. Well, I think we have to tell better stories because we're competing with all the media. But I also believe that if you tell a story well, nothing can compete with it, really, because you just have to look at what happens to a child when you say Once Upon a Time. They're right there. So actually, I think it reflects not on children but on us as writers that we're not telling good enough stories.
Sally Lloyd-Jones is with us today here on the program. We're talking about the brand new project that she's the writer of the Jesus Storybook Bible, and talking about Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing, which was born out of a painful time, a painful experience in the life of your niece, and ultimately, subsequently for you as well. I can't think of anything more heartbreaking for an adult than to see a child suffer.
I know. And you know, I was actually, another of my nieces was suffering once, and the whole family was suffering as a result. And I found myself walking down the streets of New York praying, like basically saying to the Lord, please stop them having to have this, stop it, because it was so heartbreaking. And I really felt an impression from the Lord to remind me, it's the fall, and I'm not... Sally, is not the rescuer. Jesus is the rescuer.
I had the same experience when I walked down the streets in New York just praying because it's so fallen. But, I mean, then you put somebody that you know on top of it, and that makes it that makes it that much more tender.
Although I don't experience New York like that, to be honest. I find anywhere like that.
You know,
New York, when you live there, mm-hmm. is very different than when you visit.
Right.
When I used to visit, I'd be exhausted, and I think, how does anyone ever live there?
Yeah.
But the minute you live there, it's like a village.
Yeah.
And it's the most inspiring and invigorating place to live. You know, yes, of course, you're mm-hmm. going to see. And a part of it is you see everything. You see real poverty, and then you see real wealth, and mm-hmm. those things can live right up next to each other. And there's always someone more successful than you.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't really get any great big ideas about yourself, which I love.
Maybe every Christian should move to New York for a season.
Yeah. Well, I belong to Tim Keller's church, and his vision for the city is wonderful because he points out that God's story starts in a garden, but it ends in a city. Mm. That God loves cities. So mm-hmm. he's got a lovely and about loving the city and blessing the city. And, you know, a lot of people come to New York to get something and then they leave when they've got it.
Mm.
And his call is stay and bless the city, which is lovely. Obviously not everyone's called to the city.
No, but I wonder how many of us might have adopted unknowingly that same mentality.
I think so, because we're told that, aren't we? And, you know, when I tell people, I can tell some of my friends anything if I'm playing a joke on them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've not really spent time in New York, they'll believe anything, you know, because mm-hmm. anything's possible in New uh-huh. York. So I sometimes have fun with them.
We're having a great conversation here. This is, I would consider this fun, even though the topic is rather painful.
Yes. Well, I think that's the thing. You have to, there's joy. You can have joy in pain, can't you?
Yes. Sally Lloyd-Jones is with us today. As we continue, we're going to dig a little deeper into Sally's background, find out what sparked the interest in reaching out to kids this way and what new projects are on the horizon today. Sally Lloyd-Jones, the author of the book, The Jesus Storybook Bible, which sold over 740,000 copies. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Does that just make your head spin sometimes?
I have no idea that was going to happen. And I'm very clear who the author of this success is.
Amen to that. And maybe she should call her next book Thoughts to Make Your Head Spin, in addition to Thoughts That Make Your Heart Sing. Sally Lloyd-Jones is our guest on today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Roger Marsh here back in the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. And in case you hadn't noticed, I was recording on location with her. We were at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. Just a delightful conversation with her. I encourage you to go back and revisit this audio material online at homeward.com. We podcast this edition of the program as well. You can sign up to receive our free Monday through Friday edition of the program via the podcast. When you go to the radio broadcast section at homeward.com, hit the tab for broadcast or for podcast rather, it'll take you through all the process of going ahead and getting that signed up for nothing. Absolutely free. No cost for podcasting with us. And now here's the conclusion of my conversation with Sally Lloyd-Jones.
Today on the program, Sally Lloyd-Jones is with us, the author of the Jesus Storybook Bible, and Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing is her newest project. She's an award-winning children's author.
Oh,
is
New York Times bestselling,
that. Ho-hum, she says, she says with a shrug and a modest smile. We were talking about the role that parents play in educating our kids, being intentional about building them up, and we spend so much time and money, but a lot of times we pretty much put our kids up on a pedestal and leave them there like a museum piece as opposed to treasuring them
mm-hmm.
Through children's stories and things like that. During the break, we were talking about Rick Warren, a pastor at Saddleback Church, and I had no idea, A, that he had an earned doctorate, and B, that he's fluent in Greek and Hebrew.
Goodness.
Because whenever you think of Rick Warren, you think of, oh, that's the guy who just kind of takes Christianity and boils it down very simply and shows up on Oprah Winfrey with a 5-point acrostic, and everybody mm-hmm. just goes, oh, well, I could do that, you know, purpose-driven life. I could have come up with that one, you know.
True.
I mean, how simple that is. But the fact that as we talk about the mastery of, here's a guy who understands theology, understands the gospel, knows the human condition, and the reason his church is doing as well as it is, and the reason he's reaching as many people and convinced us that he's done his homework,
mm-hmm.
and he knows us well enough to say, okay, I'm going to take the really tough concepts and make them very simple. And and that's the essence of good parenting, I think, is helping our kids at a very young age.
Yeah, and not being too complicated is true. Because
mm-hmm.
when it comes down to it, just a child responds to time
mm-hmm.
spent.
Oh, yeah.
And it can be very simple.
A child spells love, T-I-M-E, right?
No, I never heard that. That's nice. Yeah, and I think, you know, we get so busy and we're well-meaning with mm-hmm. our rules and our instructions and our everything we're giving them, all the activities. But sometimes I think we forget. It's like we do in all of our lives. We get so complicated. Mm-hmm. And when really it comes down to it, we need to spend time with our father. Well, they need time with their actual parents. And
how did things go for your niece? I mean, I'm going to circle back around.
She's much better. She's at a different school. I mean, she was going to move anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's back to performing and singing.
Oh, that's good. And being her sweet, lovable self. And I mean, her authentically lovable self.
I mean, now
self.
She's going into teenage years, so she's a little...
She'll get a whole different set of problems.
But she's wonderful.
Well, and those are problems that are... And I don't want to excuse the middle school and high school years, but when you move into adolescence like that, there are things you can't control that are happening to you.
I know.
And bullying, unfortunately, is something you can't control that's happening on the outside.
I know. It's a really hard time for them, isn't it?
It is. When you said her comments about the reason she was withdrawing and being sullen, it really struck a chord with me. And I know a lot of the parents and grandparents who heard you say she thought if she didn't act like herself, then that, because that's what was getting bullied, that personality.
And isn't that awful?
How do you disconnect that, though? I mean,
I think you tell the child, no, listen to what God says you are.
Yeah.
You were chosen before time began. Mm-hmm. Of all the things God made, you're his masterpiece. You raise their sights to what God says, just like any of us. If we remember what God says, then what people say doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But if we put what people say at the top of the list, then we're crushed, aren't we? And that's a daily, hourly thing we all have to struggle with.
And I think the second shoe to drop in that conversation is, and I mixed metaphors, but is how we live it out. It's one thing for a parent to say, oh, you know, God thinks you're a masterpiece, etc. Mm. But then if the mom or the dad is living in the... I've encountered adults who were bullied as children, and they're in their adult years, and they've learned how to cope with that, but they haven't really been healed from it.
No.
And so they're still, so-and-so is so outgoing and so giving, and I realize they're just still buying off the kids who used to hassle them at school.
I know. And we have no idea really still, do we, what we're under. But fortunately, we're not in charge, and it's God who's healing us and changing us, as long as we're open, I think, to hearing. And, you know, having good friends around you who can call you out when you're doing that. Because, you know, I've definitely had my own struggles with self-image. And, you know, even writing, I can sit down. Anne Lamott wrote a great book, Bird by Bird, which is so helpful on life and writing and life. And she talks about these dysfunctional relatives who pull up their chairs behind you as you sit down to write and start saying things like, well, that's not funny. No one's going to want to read this. And you've got them all chatting at you.
Yeah.
And her thing is you have to shrink them down, put them in a jam jar and screw the top on so you can see them, but you can't hear them. Oh. And I think that's just a great visual of taking every thought captive, but realizing we've got these thoughts that come at us. Mm-hmm. And Dr. David Martin Lloyd-Jones said, are you listening to yourself or talking to yourself? Mm. And I love that, where you take your soul in hand and you say, instead of listening, which is basically what we do when our thoughts can be bullies, right?
Right.
So we're listening to all this stuff that comes at us in the morning, like, you're a loser, you didn't do this, and why aren't you this, and all that. And you say, why are you downcast in my soul? I will put my hope in God. Mm. You know, you take charge. So I love that. I love anything like that that's kind of slightly visual that helps you.
Yeah. Well, especially with those concepts, because you can't really... They're not tangible.
No.
And it kind of helps give, you know, some tangibility to the intangible.
And Screwtape's all about, well, as long as we don't think, as long as we think it's us, and and we don't realize there's an enemy who's trying to tell us lies.
Right. Then
we don't know who to fight.
And we're all Peter drowning when Jesus is right there saying, just look at me. You know,
I know.
Here I am. And
fortunately, it's no surprise to God, is it? That's
no
hope.
No.
We get so shocked at ourselves. It's like, why?
Where did that come from?
I know.
Sally Lloyd-Jones, the author of Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing, which is brand new, and it was a huge help to her 8-year-old niece for whom it was written, but it was also written for every child who and every parent who's reaching out to that child, that hurting child. And that's the most desperate feeling in the world for a parent is to, I mean, short of burying your child, is to have a child who's suffering and you're distant and you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You are coming at this from the angle of an auntie as opposed to a mom who's dealing with this. How important is it for kids to have other adults besides mom and dad?
I think it's essential. Because
especially starting with aunties. Yes.
I think the thing is, you get to have a role in their life that the parent can't have, because they'll come and tell you things that maybe they can't tell their parent, and you haven't got all the sort of baggage of, you don't have to discipline them, you don't have to do all that. You can just be the person that can be there for them and be delighted with them. And also you can fly in and be the cool aunt and then disappear, and it's the parents that have to deal with all the difficult stuff. But I love the fact that just by being their aunt, I'm giving them permission to think about their life. They're already saying to me things like, well, maybe I want to be a writer, or maybe I want to live in New York. You know, I think it broadens their life. The more people that they have in their life that show them that God's plan is not cookie cutter. Thank goodness.
He has
We're all deployed in different places, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, when God takes a look at that Michelangelo marble and starts chiseling away, it doesn't just keep. It's not an assembly line where you get the same one every time.
I know it would
be so boring.
I know,
and I appreciate the fact. I mean, I can tell we're just meeting each other for the first time, but I can see where there's collateral damage sometimes from the other adults coming in, the cool aunt or uncle who comes in, plays with the kids, knocks over all the furniture, proverbially speaking, and then leaves leaves a mess for mom and dad to pick up.
Well, I sometimes find what's funny is that they don't now because they're like older. But when and I find this with little children, they don't know that I'm an adult, which I love. They will sit, so we'll be sitting around the table and they'll say something like, don't put your elbows on the table. Like they're telling me so I won't get in trouble with their mom, who's my friend.
Yep.
So I love that. And I think that's probably that thing of where I do feel like a child inside and that I connect with children. So they don't, at that age, they don't even know that you're this.
It's that innocence, though.
Yeah.
In their innocent naivete.
They connect with you.
Yeah, they connect with you on a childlike level, but realizing that what drew them to you was your wisdom.
Yeah. So it's a real privilege. I love it.
What else are you working on? I mean, I realize it's not like you crank these things out every year.
No, but I always have ideas, and I love picture books. That's one of my favorite things. So I always have, I think of those like seeds. So you're kind of working on several over several years, and I check in on them, and then I leave them, and then I come back. And I'm also working on a middle grade novel for children.
Excellent.
So like 8 to 10 year olds.
Excellent. That's as kids are getting older, younger, and staying younger longer, we have to look at those fringe years
and
differently. The way parents are parenting their children in their 20s, because the kids now see the whole decade of their 20s as what we used to call age 21.
Mm.
You know, where you graduate from college, get married, get a job, and move on with your life. That used to happen in several months or weeks, and now it's taking a whole decade, at least here in the States. I don't know what it's like internationally.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, as girls are beginning to mature earlier and boys starting to show secondary characteristics earlier as well, we found with the ministry work that we've done, you're having that conversation about life changes and things like that at an earlier age. So the fact that you're writing to this 8, 9, 10, 11
of course, my story will have nothing to do with that, but it will be.
No, but I mean, in terms of you're meeting a need
of,
with that demographic that we're looking at it differently than
used
to.
Yeah.
So that's
That's very cool. And I guess what I meant by that was I don't sometimes even think about, I sort of have in my mind a child in front of me so that I keep it honest, and then I just try and tell a story that will entertain them.
Good. So. Well, you're on the same line as the movie producer I spoke with recently who said, you know, I just wanted to do a movie and I wanted to do it where I live and about stuff that we do around here. And I think it's going to be fairly epic in
the
community.
That's exciting.
And look at the work that you've done and the results that you've had as well.
Well, it's a real honor. And I think if you tell a true story and you tell it the best you can, and then it goes out into the world, you have no idea what it will do. It might do great. It might not do great. But your job isn't to worry about that. Your job, well, I'm sure publishers would say it is my job, but
you can say that because your books are selling.
You know, I have books that didn't sell so well, but I still know they're good books. So my job is just to do the best book I can do. And you know, a book that I thought would do well didn't do well, but then the book that I wasn't looking at did do well. So you just don't know.
Yeah.
All you can do is keep getting better at what you do.
God has a strange sense of humor sometimes,
doesn't
he? Yes, I
know. And you're grateful because sometimes the thing you thought would have been great would not have been so great.
Right. Well, the time has flown by. Sally Lloyd-Jones, congratulations on Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing. I know that there are lots of 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 7-year-olds that are going to benefit from what you've put to paper. And thanks for being with us today here on the program.
Thank you so much, Roger. It's been great.
And that concludes my conversation with best-selling children's author Sally Lloyd-Jones. And here on the Homeward Broadcast, our privilege to rebroadcast an interview that I had a chance to record with Sally at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville. If you missed any part of this program, go to homeward.com. We archive the audio and we stream it. It's all there for free. You can go ahead and access it. And we can do so because of the prayers and faithful financial support of our listening family. Homeward is affiliated with Azusa Pacific, but this broadcast is completely listener-supported. So thanks for keeping that in mind. Also, if you'd like a copy of the audio CD of this, Ben will be happy to send it to you. All you have to do is drop us a line, and we'll thank you for your gift of any amount in support of our ministry by sending you a copy of the audio CD. You can write to us at Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, where the swallows go, the zip code 92693.
Well, please know how much we appreciate your prayers and your ongoing financial support of Homeward. You can give a gift through our secure website at homeward.com. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. You can also friend me on Facebook. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can now get my tweets, 140 characters of positive words about parenting, marriage, and faith. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for tuning in today to Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.